You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, September 4th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. So casual, Matt forgot to turn the music down, so you may not have heard me earlier.
They heard you.
All right. It's Casual Friday, folks. Did I just say we were live? I lied. We're live to tape today. Trying to get the last tiny, tiny shreds of summer. I promised Myla I would take her to Zoom Flume this summer. I promised her I would go multiple times. We didn't go once.
Is she holding you to that still?
Right now, we could be at Zoom Flume.
Ah.
I could be going down some type of water ride. She's begging me to go on the zip line. I'm telling her she can go on the zip line. I will never go on the zip line because I find that terrifying. She's probably complaining about something and yelling and screaming. Her braces are bothering her. Did I tell you she got braces? She just got braces. So we're at Zoom Flume, ladies and gentlemen. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to get new content. Joining me today, Cliff Schechter, as he does on all Fridays, even when we don't record on a Friday. He's that good. On today's program, Katrina, 10 years later, we'll get Cliff's thoughts. The right-wing meltdown. And we are just now 6 days away from, are we 6 days away from the next debate? No, 6 days away from knowing who's going to be in the next debate, 10 days away from the next Republican debate. We're over a month away from the first Democratic debate. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Just a reminder, a little bit of house cleaning. We will, on Monday, we will be airing a compilation of speeches to celebrate Labor Day. I'm putting them together. I may even have to do the intro without knowing exactly what's going to go in there. I'm trying to locate a specific John L. Lewis speech that he gave that apparently was on NBC Radio live in mid-1936 and then repeated at the end of 1936. I've got a couple other ones, and I will talk about that in the intro on the program on Monday. And we will be back live on Tuesday. And I think it's Tuesday. Now I'm all turned around in terms of the dates. But next week, ladies and gentlemen, is week one of fantasy football with FanDuel. They have more winners and more payouts than any other site. So yeah, people do this for money, the football fantasy leagues. And I know we have a couple of football fans who listen to the program, probably more than two. And probably more than two who also do fantasy football. Apparently, FanDuel is paying out over $75 million a week this football season. This is huge. They have a salary cap format, which allows you to pick any players you want for just 1 week. So you don't have to go all in. You can figure out when Tom Brady is or is not playing. I don't know if by today they've announced what the deal that they made is, if they even came to a deal. Entry fees start at just $1. Anybody can play. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our special code MAJOR, as in Majority Report, and sign up now. It's MAJOR. Special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offers only good for the first 50 people that use my code MAJOR. Today, don't forget to use my code MAJOR. You'll see the microphone. You'll click on it. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel, as in fan, F-A-N, Duel, D-U-E-L.com. Sign up today. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's such a casual Friday. I'm not even here. But it could only be a casual Friday, or I should say, on a casual Friday, we could only play this theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. Want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, he is embarking on his Labor Day retreat, but we've got him for just a couple of more moments. Cliff Schechter, how are you, Cliff?
Well, I am doing well, Sammy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm already on vacation. Hopefully, I'm at the water park
right now.
I hope so. You going to? You got those wave pools out there?
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
is that what you're doing? A wave pool?
I think right now I might be at Zoom Flume.
Oh, sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'm taking my daughter there. It's like a little water park upstate, and that's
there you go. Cool. Yeah, we're going up to a lake, as they're known.
I understand.
So there may be waves, depending upon the wind, but it's not guaranteed. But what is guaranteed is relaxation and not being constantly working. So I like that.
Yes.
Not that I mind working when it's time, but there are times for not working.
Indeed. One of those is definitely on a Labor Day. Now, all right, before we get, obviously the big news this week, and we're recording this early Thursday morning, so it is impossible to know, you know, if there's been any further movement. But the bottom line is that this week, President Obama secured essentially the needed vote, the 34th vote, to protect the Iran nuclear deal in Congress. There is no way to override a veto now by anybody This is great news for people who don't want to go to war with Iran.
That's right, which means it's very sad news for Tom Cotton. He and Bibi are going to have to console each other while he commits some form of treason next time. I'm joking sort of, but I'm referring to his meeting with Netanyahu, which I think we can all imagine if a Democrat went to another country, sat there with a leader and said, how can we make sure that some legislation or a foreign policy, even more importantly, in the United States doesn't succeed? There's Tom Cotton for you. And Bill Kristol and Joe Lieberman, I'm sure, sad somewhere. But for most of us who think that think intelligently or really just in a sane manner about what we've gone through and really how really the first part of this century has been a difficult one for the United States, and largely that's because we've constantly been at war, and a lot of the time at war with people we really don't need to be at war with, causing all sorts of damage, collateral damage and just hurting our own country and hurting people abroad. I still haven't heard the reasoning anyone can give why going to war with Iran would be a good idea.
Let's face it. I mean, the idea that there was a better deal to be had here is just a BS story. No serious person really thinks that. I mean, I understand that there are people out there who want to have a conflict with Iran or want to maintain at least the perception that Iran is an existential threat to the West in some fashion or to Israel. I understand that, but it is the height of cynicism to say that there was a better deal to be had here. This was set out to be a rather narrow deal about the development of nuclear weapons. As I've said many times, I still contend that it is not a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination that was ever Iran's intent in the first place. But they were given a gift, essentially, which was our perception or the narrative that certain quarters wanted to promote, that Iran represented an existential threat and they were pursuing a nuclear weapon. And so they just said, okay, yeah, we're pursuing a nuclear weapon. Or they didn't actually come out and said that. They denied it. But they certainly allowed that that narrative to maintain itself. And, bully for them, they were able to reverse some of the sanctions. But let's be honest. I mean, these sanctions were imposed, the ones that we're talking about that are going to be reversed, were imposed specifically over this issue of their development of a nuclear weapon. There's still a whole host of sanctions that we have unilaterally that we had imposed prior to this ratcheting up of sanctions that President Obama did back in 2009 over this nuclear issue. But, those sanctions have limited efficacy because the rest of the world continues to trade with Iran, and we could never get them to go on board with sanctions for anything less than the nuclear issue.
There's also the fact that, we made it by our behavior, we made it in Iran's rational interest to want to develop a nuclear weapon. So I don't even hold it against them if they were. It doesn't mean I'm saying that people in Iran, or not the people, but the leadership, particularly the religious leadership, are good people. They're not. They're zealots, kind of like clerks in Kentucky who won't allow people to get married because God told them not to. Yeah, the religious zealots in Iran, I'm not a fan of. But but when people use these sort of examples about them saying that, oh, that Judaism is a gutter religion or whatever it is they supposedly said, even if they did say that, you don't always make deals with people who you're kissing cousins with. The point is you make deals with people that you have to make sure that more people don't die. There was a time when Khrushchev was talking about wiping us off the map. We didn't nuke Russia over it.
And let me remind people of something that I have stopped telling my daughter. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. I mean, grow up. It's time to grow up.
You add drones. I think it should be sticks and drones may break my bones, because that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about mass casualties like what happened in Iraq for no good reason except for to to frankly cause more chaos and strength, create more of a vacuum and strengthen more extremist groups, because that's what we got out of Iraq. We got a strengthened Iran and more some of the more extremist Shia groups, and we got ISIS. So, you know, we also, again, motivated Iran and other countries, of course, to want to develop certain protections for themselves, because who knows when, you know, we'll say that we have the right to preemptively attack another country. And so there's that factor to it. You know, that's one of the big things here. Secondly, when it's all the people that argued for an attack on Iraq are arguing for this, well, they have no credibility. I don't care how many times they're on Meet the Press. Their plan sucked, quite frankly, and nothing they actually ever predicted came true. So that's another thing that's important here. And finally, you know, just put some common sense into this. I know it's hard for certain people to believe who are sitting right now on very comfortable chairs in neoconservative think tanks, but you can't fight everybody, all right? There are actually different groups of people. I know it's shocking. In the Middle East. They're called Shia and Sunnis. There are Kurds. There's even other groups beyond them. There's Christian Arabs. I know that's a tough thing to believe in because we're never told about them. And so the fact of the matter is when we know that there are different groups of people fighting each other, we can't take everybody on. And, you know, we've had this devil's pact with Saudi Arabia now for a long time because we get oil and we kind of ignore that they behead people and kill people for adultery and God knows how many other terrible things that they do based upon their religion. So does it make any sense then that when it's ISIS we're dealing with, we're going to go and fight with the people who are often fighting with ISIS for us? Which, I mean, it's not Saudi Arabia that's out there taking on ISIS. It's actually Iran in many cases. So, that, you know, it's kind of like when we're going to go fight with Syria. I mean, we changed who we're going to fight with twice. You know, first we're going after the leadership there in Syria, which is the people that are fighting with ISIS, among others. I'm not saying there aren't other factions there. And then we're going after ISIS. So, you know, when it gets to a point where you are switching every 6 months who you're going to go after, it seems to me to be a bad idea to go to war, doesn't it? You know, and I guess I said that was the final point, but I've got one more, which is this existential threat stuff. Again, you know, and maybe I've got more leeway to say this because my background is that of somebody who's Jewish, even though I can't claim to have been religious at all for most of my life in any way. You know, we're the United States. We're not Israel. Israel needs to take care of Israel. The United States needs to take care of the United States. I'm an American. And the fact that I'm sitting in the United States of America means I have to think about what's in my country's best interest, not in Israel's best interest. And it's amazing how you can't bring these topics up or suddenly you get in trouble and you get called anti-Semitic. But you can have people say, we have to go to war with Iran because they said they want to wipe Israel off the map. And then you turn around and you say, you know, something along the lines of, yeah, we're the United States and you're just advocating for Israel. That's anti-Semitic. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like you can't give one justification and then get all upset when somebody calls you on that justification. You know what I mean? I mean, we need to think about what's in our interests here. And to me, going to another war in the Middle East is not in anybody's interest here. So, I mean, I have not, again, you know, from all the way through from the far right nuts like Tom Cotton to sort of your neocon Democrats, you know, like Chuck Schumer, I have not heard one justification yet that makes any sense to me for going to war with Iran or for not accepting this deal. And the ones that they make that we're going to back, you know, we just won't accept this deal. We'll put sanctions back on them. Yeah, well, the people who wanted us to make this deal, too, like China and Russia and France, they're not going to keep sanctions on them. So it's not going to work.
Right. The sanctions regime is over one way or the other. It doesn't matter. And but beyond that, too, I would argue that. There's a strong reason to believe that to the extent, and I agree totally what you're saying in terms of like, look, American foreign policy has to be dictated by American interests first, regardless of whether or not the intersector are aligned with our allies at all times. But I would also, frankly, I would say that I'm not convinced that this deal is not in the interests of Israel in terms of its.
I think it very much is. So I'm hoping I wasn't unclear
right.
about
no,
that.
No, but I mean, I think that's also an important point to make is that, you know, it is impossible for anybody to objectively say that Benjamin Netanyahu hasn't been playing the most craven game of politics with this issue. From, you know, sneaking into the country, essentially, to give a speech to Congress, I mean, he didn't literally sneak into the country, but I think people understand what I'm talking about. You know, using this to bolster his reelection.
Who became the Israeli ambassador to the United States, a former Republican consultant, basically endorsing Romney. I mean, you can go, you know, on.
Yeah,
on,
I mean,
on,
there's
on.
A lot of, there's a tremendous amount of politics here. And, you know, what interests me, too, I mean, obviously, this is a big accomplishment for President Obama. It's an important, I think, you know, step towards ensuring that we do not at least get involved in another Iraq for at least a, you know, we can take maybe 5-10 years time off of a major war, maybe at one point. What's also interesting in terms of the domestic politics, I mean, AIPAC now has sort of like they're going to fundraise off this in a big way. They have sort of reestablished themselves as the sort of premier voice in the service of
Israel. But they failed. I mean, it is important to note they failed.
They,
I mean,
also failed. I mean, but, you know,
they spent millions of dollars apparently on lobbying and these campaign ads that were a joke. And, you know, we don't even know if they're going to be able to hold 40 votes yet.
Right. But you know, with that said, too, I mean, let's be honest, you know, AIPAC is no different than any of these other outfits that are out there. And, you know, it's full of people who want to make sure that their organization continues on.
It makes a lot of money. And yes, there's always those interests. Absolutely.
What also interests me is Chuck Schumer. Now, it looked like for a while, I mean, it was sort of fascinating to watch. Schumer comes out very strong against this deal. He says he's going to whip, and this is, he's doing this as the presumptive leader, or I should say the presumptive leader of the Democrats in 2016 in the Senate. It could be majority leader, it could be minority leader. And
so
he comes
up. Whip skills include getting Bob Menendez on board, and that's what we can hope for the future. I'm not sure. I'm really scared.
Well, I mean, it was fascinating to watch what happened, because Schumer comes out. And people are like, oh, there's no way he's going to whip this. And then within a day or two, it becomes clear that he is actually whipping it. And there is major pushback, not just by progressive groups like Move On and PCCC and Credo and whatnot. And they came out very strong, very quickly, and started attacking Schumer in terms of his bona fides to be a leader of the Senate. And then you started hearing reports from Senate staffers saying, like, this is not how a leader acts. We understand if Chuck Schumer has to kowtow to his, and they didn't, I'm paraphrasing, if he has to kowtow to his conservative, rich Jewish donors in New York. And I would imagine the crossover between Wall Street guys and some of these donors is there's quite a bit of crossover. They say it's one thing if he has to do that, but he is now basically making us pay for his vote getting in his district, in his state.
Right.
In other words, they've got to go out on a limb.
I'll tell you, I don't believe for a second that that's what he needed to do either. I mean, the guy's sitting on $20 million or whatever dollars already in his damn account. And, you know, if he suddenly broke with Wall Street, he'd have enough money for two more campaigns. All right?
Well, I mean, apparently what he said is like, look, he wanted to lay down the law that on every vote on Israel, you got to be with Chuck Schumer. And now maybe that's
that law
just
certainly got laid down.
And so, you know, the pushback was so strong about him as leader. I think he backed off. I think he basically, I mean, this is another one of those moments where you see like, look, this is about at the end of the day, political power. It is not about whether or not a guy is a good guy or a bad guy, or you can trust this guy or that guy. This is about political power. When you exercise this power, it changes their behavior. And it doesn't necessarily change Chuck Schumer's vote, but you know, it's just him and Menendez.
But we didn't need Chuck Schumer's vote, so that's really what mattered to us.
Exactly.
We created a penalty structure
where
there was going to be a price to pay potentially with his leadership, or he'd have to actually fight for it and campaign for it and work harder for it by doing this. And you know, we've talked about this basic principle before, you know, which is it's not always even about winning that can sometimes, it's actually about making them have to work for it, because so many of these guys have just gotten lazy. and they're used to getting reelected easily. I mean, this case wasn't about reelection; it was about a party election. But it's a related principle, which is why primaries are important. You know, and using that as one of the tools in your toolbox, which is to say, you know, if you do this, guess what? You're not going to waltz ahead next time. You're
and it's
have
not
to
just about
it.
Waltzing. It's also, you know, when you say it's you're going to have to fight for it, that implies you could lose. You know,
yeah, right. I'm not saying it means you. I mean, we've won some of those. Certainly, we have a whole bunch of them. I'm just saying, even you know, but knowing that the threat is there, that A, first you're going to have to fight your butt off, and what would be much easier, and second, you may actually lose at the end of that.
Right,
I think
right.
It's a good combo.
Right, indeed. So, and you know, now it's just on to the next question, and it remains to be seen whether or not we can get a filibuster of this deal to make it, you know, that much more of a slam dunk. And it would be a nice flexing of some muscle, and it would, you know, anything to isolate Chuck Schumer more, in my opinion, is a good thing. You know, make him feel what it feels like to be this lonely. And
that's right. And to put him and his buddy Menendez, who may be in prison soon enough, and Frank, and otherwise the Republican Party on the wrong side of history, will be a good thing. So when we get to the next crucial point like this, because there will be, you know what I mean? Whether it's Iran again or somebody else. There's always people advocating for war because their ideology dictates they must, or because there's defense contractor money to be made, or for whatever reason there is. And then, you know, we have to be vigilant about that. So I think, you know, it's great that we've gotten to the point where now we know this deal will pass and the Senate will not be able to stop it with the 2/3 vote. But even stopping a filibuster, being able to retain a filibuster would be great, too.
Yeah, that would be a really nice a big win. All right. So let's move on to some of the other stuff this week that, you know, the there are some weeks just where I think like, you know, well, first off, let's start with this, because I said this the other day on the program and it bears reiterating. Because of the CNN decision in terms of who they're going to include in the debate, which basically says that anybody between now and September 10th who cracks into the top 10 will be included into the debate. So theoretically, there could be 11, there could be 12, there could be 13. I mean, theoretically, 14 people in this debate, because from poll to poll, it's possible that one person cracks the top 10 one time and then another does. And so those are the new criteria for CNN. And that is basically a license to just be insane. In fact, it's not even a license to be insane. It's almost a prerequisite, right? Because if you're one of these people down in the basement dwellers, you got to say stuff to get yourself up there. And it's sort of a par for the course right now. We're seeing with conservatives, you know, between what's happening in Kentucky with this county clerk. And yeah, this is not a Republican Party edict, but it reflects on them. It has to do with McKinley versus Denali in terms of the naming of this mountain, that the state itself, right? I mean, this is the funny part.
That the two Republican senators of Alaska want renamed.
States' rights. States' rights, right? Like, I mean, like, where, you know, there's no, it's just unbelievable how.
And I can tell you, sitting here in Ohio, how ridiculous it is that Rob Portman and John Boehner and people that probably barely knew McKinley's biography as recently as a week ago are, you know, have suddenly become the biggest fans of McKinley. Well, you know what? Then name something after him here in Ohio.
That's not the point,
though. You don't get to
dictate
to Alaska what's going on. I mean, it's just so.
This is pure.
How about this? We let Murkowski name any mountains here. Should we do that?
It is pure Trumpism. It is pure Trumpism. And by that, I mean, they don't care. They don't care. I mean, look, the state has been calling it Denali for 35 years.
35 years,
plus,
right? Since 1980,
yes,
I believe.
1920 to 75, I think. And so they've been for over 35, 40 years. And so, and forget the state's right thing. They don't care that it's not Mount McKinley anymore. If it was called Mount Reagan, they would all be doing somersaults.
They're changing it from Mount McKinley to Mount Reagan. I mean, remember, you know, they want to change. They would be perfectly happy, these guys that supposedly love our founding fathers and our history, to knock Alexander Hamilton off of a certain bill to put Reagan on there, right?
Oh,
they
sure.
don't care about his position on the 10. So
if this was called Mount Bork, they would be over the moon.
Can we attack them for hating our founding fathers and being anti-America? It's so stupid. The whole thing is so stupid.
The problem with this is that they just hate the fact that it's Denali. They just hate the fact that it's like an indigenous name. And that, to me, is like the essence of why Donald Trump is in the lead. It is because...
Well, let me say this, that they know that they can basically go to this well that they've gone to via emails and hate, you know, publications and hate radio and, you know, all the rest. They can go to this because they've turned so many people, and when I went to that Koch brothers conference, I saw it up close, into frothing, angry morons, okay, who have lost control of whatever faculties they have, and they're easily sort of, you know, whipped up into a frenzy about anything because they listen to this propaganda. These people have been propagandized 24/7 a day. And so you've got a combination of this group of people they've turned essentially into rabid dogs, and you've got them. And they're ready to throw a piece of meat because it works very, very well for political leaders who are trying to gain traction. So for some pathetic, you know, hack like Rob Portman, it works out really well because he's got a tough reelection race coming up. And anything he can do to make the Tea Partiers overlook the fact that he came out for gay marriage because his son came out very courageously as gay, Rob Portman's trying to do. So, hey, I'm not with you on that one, but immigration, guns, the damn Mount Denali, I'm with you on that, you know, and hopefully he's hoping that's enough. And that's the kind of stuff that's going on here. It's a children's game, really. But
well, and let's call it the Denali thing what it is. I mean, it is a, I don't know if you want to call it a racism or a xenophobia or a, you know,
or
just
all,
class,
the above. It's
all
tribalism.
The above. It is, and that is why, like, you know, that is what I'm saying. It's just basically, it's a Trumpism. It is basically just like saying, hey, we're not going to allow this to happen. It's just wrong because it's giving in to sort of like smaller groups of people who are, I don't know, some...
Because we need to make America great again. And we can't, you know, I mean, it's BS slogans and simple fluff on the surface to work people's emotions. Because, again, you need to make sure they're always angry about that kind of stuff, or else they might think about how they really got into the economic situation so many of them are in and whose fault that is. And what issues have led to that as opposed to, you know, all the other demons that you hand them every day. And yes, that's exactly, so you're right. I mean, it is a perfect reflection of Trump and how Trump has been able to get to the point where he's been able to get to, you know, and that's where we are right now.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to be also interesting in that regard. And I want to move on to some of this other stuff, but Jeb Bush came out with it almost as if this guy just does not feel like he's trying. He came out with an ad that he supposedly is going to use to hit Donald Trump, about how Donald Trump is very New York and has sort of like a shaky liberal, I mean, a shaky conservative bona fides. But, much of the stuff that Jeb Bush is talking about in the ad, Donald Trump expressed during the Republican debates, so it's a really sort of lame...
People already know
yes.
this stuff. They don't care. The people that are drawn to him are drawn to his obnoxious attitude.
Exactly.
It's all rhetoric and personality. It's not about the issues in the end. I mean, I suppose if he disagreed with them on every issue and loudly and profusely, but look, he's come out for closing the carried interest loophole. I mean, he's come out against the free trade deal. He's done a number of things that you would think, where he's broken from Republican...
Universal health care!
So if people were going to be offended by that stuff, they'd be offended by that stuff. I think the only thing that even is worthy of Jeb Bush taking a shot at that he's bringing up in any of these ads is the you know, giving Hillary Clinton money and going to Hillary Clinton, you know, having Hillary Clinton attend his wedding, or he went out, whatever it was, because that's, you know, Hillary Clinton is an emotional point for these people, who you're trying to appeal to. And so that might be worth it. But with the other stuff, what Jeb's not getting here is it is about emotion. This is all about emotion. So if you really want to go after Trump, you have to go after him on stuff like that. If you go after him on policy positions, you're going to lose. You're not going to change anybody's minds. But, you know, whatever, let Jeb waste his time. It's still kind of funny to watch him flail.
What's amazing, too, is Carson's rise. Now, I guess it's not that amazing when I think about it. I mean, Carson's rise reeks more like the couple of weeks that Michelle Bachmann had on top and the Rick Perry had on top. I mean, I think that is...
Yep.
I think that's fleeting in some respects.
He had a good debate. He's not a politician, so that's likable. And I think there's a whole lot of Republicans who want to prove that they're not really racist. So, you know, they love Clarence Thomas, and they like Ben Carson, and they like Marco Rubio. You know, they're willing to like people who are different as long as those people embrace the exact same philosophy as the white male base does.
And I would say with Carson,
really proves anything.
Carson's also got a lot of that God Squad stuff.
But I agree with you. He doesn't have the money to be able to stay in this like Trump. He doesn't have the media appeal to be able to stay in this. He had a good debate. Maybe he'll have another good debate. But in the end, I think it's completely fleeting. He probably won't have the organization or anything close to it at a caucus like Iowa where it's necessary. My guess is that maybe this race will be, instead of seeing people rise to the top like the Bachmann, Gingrich, you know, Kane crew, you'll see people rising up in second place one after the other, you know. But in the end, unless they can get this down to where it's Trump versus an establishment person, one of them who actually has any appeal, they're in trouble. And frankly, I don't even think they can do much about it then. I think, as you've said, and I think I said in the show, if Trump wants it to not be him and hand it off to Ted Cruz or somebody, that's possible. But otherwise... You know, I'm not saying the establishment can't come back and claim this thing, and I'm not saying Trump can't screw up. He certainly says enough things that are crazy often enough that maybe one of them will go over the line. Maybe. I have a hard time seeing what that is, but it's possible. But otherwise, you know, I think he quite likely, if he wants to be, can be their nominee.
It's starting to feel more and more like that, although, I don't – who knows at this
point?
Well,
think if he dumped his own money into this right now, Sam.
Right.
So on top of the grassroots,
but the thing is, like, I don't even know if the money's the issue at this point because, you know, what do you use? I mean, well, let me put it this way: there are two things that you spend your money on, right? And you know this certainly better than I do. One is TV, and one is actually paying staffers on the ground. And so the real question is whether or not he's going to pay staffers on the ground, because there is no doubt in my mind that he has already gotten $50 million worth of media coverage.
Easily,
right? I mean,
but the thing about TV, when you do paid media, is you can actually 100% control the message. So. Is it worth? I mean, you're right. He's getting a ton of free media, but at some point, is it worth it if he wants to control how he frames himself versus these other guys? You know, there is some utility to that.
Oh no, it's even better for him.
He's not going to have any trouble
when he goes on
doing that.
When he goes on with a media person, he immediately gets to frame himself because you're right. The bottom line is, the guy just wants to project that he's an a-hole. I mean, that's basically it. And that he's not going to take the crap from these losers who are interviewing him. So it's almost even harder for him to do it with free media. You know, with paid media. I mean, it's good. He's really going after Jeb Bush. I mean, I was watching the ad that Jeb Bush did, and then they rolled in Trump's ads, and it's just devastating. I mean,
I'm just saying, think about right now. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, but I'm just saying from my experience, again, it still could help that if he were willing right now to dump $20 million into, besides all the free media he's getting on top of that, owning all the airwaves, radio, TV, constant media, constant, you know, and direct mail, constantly into people's homes or whatever. If he were to make that decision, I don't think any of the other Republicans has a chance almost. I really don't. So, I mean, I almost don't think they do now. Mm. I mean, again, you know, someone else could come forward, something could happen. It's politics. Crazy things happen. I feel like I say this over and over again when I talk to you, because people, you know, have these predictions. It's just like people a year ago said, Hillary Clinton could never have a problem. It's hers. It's easy. Well, not quite as easy as you thought, is it? You know, I mean, this is politics. Things change. Bad things happen. Scandals happen. New people pop up. You know, random things happen that benefit one candidate or hurt another, you know, whether it's a hurricane or a financial collapse or whatever it is. So you just, you can't ever fully predict, right? But, I mean, Trump, I'm just saying, is in a very, very good position. And being that he has the resources of that someone like Ben Carson doesn't have, and right, all this earned right, media, puts him in an even a stronger position. So, you know, I don't, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think the only, really, for me, the only question is whether he actually even wants it.
That, I agree with that totally. I agree with that totally. My theory is he doesn't. And I think I've told you that, you know, I anticipate somewhere around like February, he will, when faced with sort of the March primaries, then, you know, that he may just like say, like, there's somebody in my family who's sick and I've got to drop out of the race, but I'm going to pick the next president. And I've decided it is Ted Cruz or blankety blank who I've met with.
Or it could be Carson.
Or it could be Carson. I mean, but I actually think that, like, you know, for him, you know, the guy's got a huge ego. And I think even better than being president is the guy who gets to pick the president, right? Because
no, we agreed on that last week, and I completely think so. And the other thing he loves about his ego is what's important to him is that people tell him how great he is and kiss his ass.
Right.
And what's been very clear so far is the biggest ass kisser among the bunch has been Ted Cruz,
oh, indeed,
who constantly is sucking up to Trump and, you know, doesn't take a moment to defend Trump when it comes up that, oh, Trump said this. Some of the other guys, you know, have hesitated.
Don't they still have their Iran?
Or even attacked him.
Don't they still have their Iran rally? I guess that's not
going
to work out.
Yeah, I think so.
But
yeah, it's not. But I'm just saying, I think that I don't know what it'll be. Maybe now it'll be a rally, another white resentment rally of attacking this deal that will hurt the United States or whatever it is, you know, that won't stop it, just a rally against the whole concept. But in the end, again, it just shows they've got a little thing going on. And one of the reasons they do is because Ted Cruz, you know, who is just, you know, really on the par of being as shameful as Trump, would do anything. You know, he'd run over his mom to get elected. So, I mean, you know, kissing Trump's butt, a guy he knows is holds all these positions that he supposedly is appalled by when it's a Democrat who holds them, is no problem for him.
All right.
You know what I mean? He'll
yes,
do it.
All right. Well, let's just quickly let you address. I spoke about it on the program, but it was in the better half this week. We earlier in the week, we played some video of a Kentucky County clerk named Kim Davis, I think it is.
That is correct.
She's an elected official. There was video of her refusing and basically shutting down the office, at least in terms of providing marriage licenses, because she doesn't want to give marriage license to same-sex couples because of the Bible, because the Bible has told her, in her interpretation of the Bible and in her interpretation of Christianity, she is not allowed to do that, even though that's what her job is. And then a day or two later, it comes out that, you know, for someone who's that pious, she has quite a history in, disregarding the value of marriage.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to me about her is she's incredible. You know, first of all, it's not even her interpretation of the Bible. I'm sure it's somebody else's interpretation for her, like whoever the local Republican or right-wing pastor is or whatever, because clearly if she were somebody intelligent enough to read the Bible, then if she really believed in the Bible as the literal word, then my guess is, you know, she would be honoring the Sabbath, or she would have to go and have somebody execute her, among other things. And all these other things that I would be willing to promise you she knows nothing about nor cares anything about that appear in the Bible.
Well, now, she's been married 4 times. She has been divorced 3 times. Now, to be fair, she didn't become a Christian, apparently, until after her last divorce.
Right, well, and you know, that's a get-out-of-jail-free card. I mean, as we learned from George W. Bush, the beauty of being reborn and claiming that you've now seen the light is you really then can write off everything. It's like it's like an enormous tax write-off, but it's for God.
That is basically my plan. For those people who have a problem with what I've said about Sam Harris or Gamergate or whatever it is, or if there's any right-wingers out there who feel that I have been inappropriately dismissive of libertarians or of the idea of a free market. Give me a little time. I still have time to find Jesus, literally Jesus, and then I'll be forgiven for that. Now,
that's
here's
what I'm saying. I will do that at some point. Apologize for all this stuff. It's just we'll keep you guessing when that will be, but then it's like a clean slate, which is pretty awesome.
You and I could do this together, Cliff, and that would be, I mean, this.
I think we should.
I think we'll
plan it out like a joint Jesus finding.
I'm thinking, like, look, first off,
we'll be like the Indiana Joneses of Jesus.
Well, you know what we could do is just pitch a show. You know, like where maybe we could pitch
Jews for Jesus.
I don't know. We could pitch it to, I'm just thinking we pitch it to CNN where we've just, you know, through Jesus, we now basically deliver right wing talking points. And, you know, we could bring on formerly, you know, our former allies and the left-wing movements and, you know, just tell them they've got to come and see the light with us. I'm spitballing.
I like this. No, I mean, look, you. I mean, pointing out her personal history, she's made marriage an issue, completely fair.
Of course.
That, again, she committed adultery because that's their view. You can't be unmarried.
Well, right? Look, here's the bottom
line. The Bible
line.
Says divorce doesn't exist. It's not allowed. So in the view of the Bible, if you look at it literally, she's committed adultery.
Oh, no. You don't even need to do that. Because when she had twins, 5 months after she divorced her first husband, those twins were sired by her third husband, but adopted by her second husband.
Wow, I didn't even know that part. Very sexy.
Yes. So, in other words, she had an affair while she was married to guy A with guy C and did not get around to marrying guy C until after she had married guy B and divorced guy B and then ultimately married.
Clearly, that's exactly what the Bible says about marriage.
Isn't there something about keeping it in the family or something like that?
Something like that. I think it's different strokes for different folks is what it says.
And the seasons go round and round and the painted ponies go up and down. There's some. We'll
learn. You take the
good,
you take the bad, you take them both, and then you have the facts of life.
But I think that is, I don't know if that's like in one of the Psalms or something like that. This is something that you and I are going to have to brush up on, Cliff, when we end up, you know.
The point is, as much as it's fun to make fun of her, clearly she's trying to be a martyr, and I'm sure there are right-wingers who have contacted her and are encouraging her, if not outright paying her, to stay where she is so they can get video of them dragging her out of that office. And you know what? As far as I'm concerned, I would give them what they wish for. She should be. Or I saw somebody else say what would be an interesting way to react to it is to have a whole bunch of people, I think gay and straight, but people that support marriage equality, go and hold a sit-in at her office until they get arrested, which maybe not a bad idea because then you don't make her the martyr. Then it's sort of more like the civil rights movement. But whatever it is, she needs to be dealt with because she doesn't have a right to make these decisions. She's clearly not qualified. She doesn't even seem to be able to make decisions in her personal life. So let's have her not making decisions for the rest of us. And, oh, yeah, if you want a country where God makes those kinds of decisions, you can move to Saudi Arabia. This is not that country. This is the United States of America. We have these things called laws, and you follow them or you pay the price.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Cliff, I don't want to keep you from your Labor Day weekend. Have a great weekend.
You too, man.
And we'll see you next week. Are your kids starting school next week?
They're already there. We start early here. It's crazy,
That's
man.
That's insane.
Oh, isn't it?
Yeah.
In August, I know.
That is crazy.
But they're on their second week already. So
That's
they're gone.
Nuts. All right.
It is.
All right, buddy. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much again.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the great Cliff Schechter. Have a great Labor Day weekend. We will have a Labor Day show for you, a compilation of a couple of speeches, and then we'll be back live on Tuesday.